Band 5, 1981, vid passarna, kvällsföredrag med Ruth Dennison på Ljusbacken.
Did you enjoy your birthday cake? You still enjoy it? It's gone. How old do you become today?
26.
A good time, a good age to start very seriously on the way of the Dharma. I think that we have now, on the evening of the fifth day, somehow a little idea or a little answer to the great question, why am I here? Why do I meditate? Why do I go through so much effort and pain and effort is good, and so much pain. Why do I have to do all this? I think that we now perhaps realize that it is for our knowing ourselves a little more, for understanding this living process which I am, and to which we have referred last night quite deeply. I think you remember that we have recognized and see that there is not really the full truth when I say I sit here, I eat my dinner, I go in holidays. For this I we have seen is actually just like in a collective name for parts, remember? For parts, for many parts, like the name car is the collective term for many parts, which when they are put together in the right order, there is a mechanism which transports us and runs, and we call it car. In this same way, we have somehow tried to understand it is with us, that we are comprised as a living process of many parts. We were mentioning five parts. There are many more under divisions, naturally, otherwise we the five parts, we said, is me, And if that would be all, we would know ourselves already. But each part, the part of the body, the part of feeling, the part of perception, the part of consciousness, and the part of mental formation have many, many sub-parts. It is endless. We can talk to the end of our life about it, and we can also be engaged in this process in which we are engaged to find out about these parts, about these little parts working together in constant interaction and comprising this process I call myself. And that is why it is so difficult to really know it in a short time. We have to work very slowly and very long and very precise in a way till we begin to recognize these little parts and how they interact and how they relate to each other. And the greatest difficulty is that it is not somewhere here next to us where we can observe that. No, it is right here what I observe. That process is myself. So it is also, it's an observing of myself. It is a becoming acquainted with itself, the process actually, since this I is also not so real. You see, it is a mental quality, we said, a mental capacity called concentration and attention, which is beginning to get open and to begin to look or to observe all the other little parts, all the other mental factors or mental abilities, and the physical too. And it is very evasive and very elusive because it is not a solid thing we have here and say, now attention, now concentration, please come and stay with me and observe the whole living process and tell me. You see, it is not so. This me is not really in there. It's not necessary for observing and for watching or for looking, what else did we say, for attending, for being a witness. Not. It is the attention which does it, and the concentration which helps the attention to stay there. So, and that is some mental vibration which is very liquid and very movable. It arises and it also goes away, like all the other qualities or abilities, like diligence or effort or let me say elasticity we mentioned, all these are also mental abilities. And just like attention, it arises and goes away. And that's why it is so difficult to come to understand how it works in here. But the Buddha gave us quite an exact way and gave us a very good direction. That is so wonderful about the teaching of the Dharma, that it is just a way to follow. We have direction, and I try all day long to share these directions with you, to invite you to follow them, and to manifest them, the doing of the direction. So this whole process of coming to understand itself is based on two planes, or two, what should I say? It's based on a foundation, let me say. It's based on a behavior which we may call morality, or in the Pali text, it's sila. So that is to say, in order to practice this doing of looking into this living process, in order to develop this awareness and this understanding, we have to conduct ourselves in a very special way. That is meant, it is based on sila or on moral conduct. The very special way is that we are following some rules for our behavior which keep us away from a very gross and impulsive behavior or doings, which don't disturb, which usually, if we would do, disturb ourselves. And so there are some special rules given which protect us from this gross, impulsive behavior. And I think you remember in the beginning we spoke and committed ourselves to five basic rules. And that is called the foundation of sila. If you can keep to these basic rules, you abstain from speaking the untruth and of harsh words and of angry words, of insulting words, of speaking in such a way where you are putting people against each other, or speaking very bad about people, or insulting. And there is the rule of not committing violent actions or taking life. Then there is the rule of abstaining or keeping away from not stealing, or in a positive way we can say respecting other people's property. And there is that important rule of abstaining or staying away from any sort of intoxicants or drugs. And then there is that rule of being a very accurate and very straight in your intimate relationships. I have repeated that tonight for one reason, because it is not easy for a normal person to really keep always to these rules and to be perfect in sila, to be really accomplished in that sort of in that way of life. It takes long time. We have to practice and to remind ourselves and to promise again and again these rules to obey. Not so much as a law, you should do it, but rather more as an understanding that if I don't keep to such a moral life, I am not able really to dedicate efforts and time for the exploring and of myself, of coming to self-knowledge. That is a very basic thing to accomplish. Our practice must rest on sila. Very important. Because it protects us. It is like a wall around us from the cruelties and bad things in life. Which are in everybody. So it protects us not so much from the others, cruel, others immoral life and living, but it protects us from ourselves when we begin to understand that sila is the basis for the practice of coming to understand myself. And then this practice rests upon another great foundation, and that would be the development of what the Buddha calls metta. That is, he also calls it, when you read the scriptures, divine abode, or the divine dwelling. Now, abode and dwelling is like is a physical place, we would think, but that's not what is meant. It is more to be understood as a mental state, as a type of consciousness. But actually it is to be understood even more than that. To dwell in metta means actually to have a very wide open heart and an open mind. You see, we usually live in a very constricted way, very narrow, very concerned with ourselves and with our worries and anxieties, with our hopes and with our expectation, and also with our demands and our rejection. That is always referred to what I feel here. But that is not but the space and the state of metta is something is which wants to get us out of that, which invites us to widen our heart and to widen our mind. In other words, to cut loose from these very personal concerns all the time, and stay there a little bit more fearless and open with our heart in an embracing way, in a more couraged way. Yeah, I would say in a more, well, aware way is true, but in a grateful way too. For what you have and what you are a human being. And you have the capacity to find out about your real true nature. And that is a very beautiful thing, that we have this. Many people don't even know of that and never come to know, and go out of this life in a very restricted, narrow, painful way. Now, metta shall help us to overcome this egocentricity, this selfishness of ourselves. And it is always addressing and concerning our heart. You see, we all know what the heart means. It isn't just that which beats here. But it is actually something, when you speak about somebody and say, do you want to describe his very nice quality, you probably have said often or heard others saying, he has a good heart. You have not seen his eye. You don't mean because it has a better red color, or it is beating faster or more rhythmically. You don't mean that he has a good heart. You mean something on the mental level, but not alone on the mental level. It is something which is connected, which is also mental, but it is connected to a quality of the mind which is actually love, and which is so very contrary to that usual behavior of ourselves, where we close up and retreat and are fearful and suspicious and so very much only concerned about ourselves. Now, metta is that state of mind which goes over these limits, which reaches out to the other you in helping, wanting to help, maybe in listening, in understanding more. And it's not just doing it because of your personal liking it. It is just recognizing actually that actually all beings, all human life, and also all non-human life is in a natural way striving toward feeling good, toward happiness, toward getting away from suffering. And so this state, which we call widening your heart, means you kind of understand that, and you are therefore making yourself available for all life around you, or at least you try and think of it in these terms. You acknowledge other life, and you open up and overcome your retreating and your fears and your suspicion, and that is called metta. It is this quality in us which is tender and caring and really opening up, loving in a way, but not only loving because you get something for this in return. No, this is a quality of the heart which does not ask for that. It doesn't want anything for the self, because it somehow begins to understand that what we said before, that self is actually only a name for all the parts I am, for that entire process. So how can the self expect something? It is really not there. It's just that name for that process. And that entire process is so vast and so vast, and yet so without substance. It's just energy constantly in motion. It doesn't have the quality of wanting something in return. It doesn't have that striving and needing and clinging. It doesn't. It is flowing, and it is changing all the time. It is has even no solid substance. So it is all what is there, it can look at it and can meet it. There is no boundary, no fence around it, and makes a limit here between me and you. My process is flowing and changing and living in constant interaction as energy. And yours too. So there, how can I expect anything, you see? When I love, I can love here and can be open without wanting anything for me. If something comes, it's fine. But it isn't that demand for that there. That is a very special quality of love, therefore. That's why it's called metta, because when you translate metta, it is actually more called all embracing love, kindliness it is. In German we have a very nice word for that, it's called Güte. But in English I really don't find a better one. It is loving kindness, perhaps. Loving kindness. It is not to mix up, and it isn't really that what we usually understand on the love. We think of two people, they love each other, and they're very passionate with each other, and very the love is like a flame, so warm. But then, when the expectation of each other doesn't get fulfilled, when I have disappointment with the other, when the other person is behaving not quite right to my demands, these flames, this fire of love gets very cold. It gets ice cold, and then we call it, I don't like him anymore. I reject that person now. I hate it. You see, this chain is, it is a dependent love. It is depending on expectation and what I get for it. It is almost like a market item where I pay and I get something back. And that is the type of love which is mostly between people, very much depending on what I get back. But metta is loving kindness, is that love which is not bound to these narrowness. It is walking and stepping out of the limit and the relatedness to my personal feelings, perhaps. Egotistic feelings. It is not really selecting either. It is a very harmonious, open, loving kindness toward all life, toward life wherever you meet it. May it be a being, a human being, or a non-human being, or a plant is also non-human being. It is a tenderness and a softness, an acceptance and an appreciation of life. And the Buddha speaks of this very vehemently, very as a very important foundation for our practice. And he also, just like Sila, and he also speaks and also says that we can develop this. It is not a thing, it is not a state of mind or something which comes with us, which is present, which is already developed. Since it is a mental state, or it has to do something with mind and mentality, it is possible to develop that quality of ourselves gradually and slowly, to think in terms of love which is not just loving for some purpose, and which is not just bound to my needs, but which is a very open friendliness to all. And maybe to realize at the same time that life needs such warmth and such atmosphere. You know, we may be able to live without meditation, the Buddha says, like the meditation where you attend all the time with your attention. But love, or loving kindness and openness of heart, is absolute absolute necessary for the growing of life, for life as a flowing. It is necessary for life because all living creatures need this quality to grow. So we should, in developing this quality of metta within our heart, think of this importance very often, contemplate it, and fill the heart with positive thoughts, fill the heart with the deep meaning of love. Because when you really create these thoughts about it, and you live in these thoughts of loving kindness and openness, then you are very likely to do these things which the thoughts think. In fact, you are doing it. As I think, so I do. Mind is the forerunner of all my deeds. When I am angry, that is mind. Mind formation, mental formation. It vibrates, it forms itself, and it runs throughout my whole body. And I am angry. And very likely the next act or action I do is not in harmony. It is the expression of this anger. So as the mind is thinking, and as the mind is forming itself, or the mental thing, then so do I act, so do I speak. Do I form or allow my mental the whole domain of mental energy to think in positive terms, in terms of openness and loving kindness, and in form of maybe caring and helping, or understanding that all life loves to be loved, not only my little sweetheart, but all life. Then, and I'm concerned about, and have my mind filled with these thoughts, very likely, and I will act in a very much more harmonious and positive way, in a caring way, in a giving way, in a very sensitive way. All our practice of Vipassana meditation, of observing all arising things in my body and mind, cannot really have success, cannot really become strong and full, if we do not have it based upon sila, what I say, good moral conduct, and upon metta, upon loving kindness. And tonight I wanted to talk with you about 14 qualities which the Buddha asks us to develop and to practice very consciously, which are a tremendous assistance and help for the development of this all-embracing, powerful mental force, which we call the heart or metta. And you, as I will go through it, you will see that it isn't actually so very strange and so unknown to you, because most of these 14 qualities we actually have in us, and we do here and there express ourselves in them, but we are not aware of it mostly, and we not really observe that, and we not really are giving right effort and good care to recognize these qualities and to see how little this one is developed and how little bit more the other one maybe is developed. So why I want to talk and to mention them tonight with you is that you recognize them, and that we can now take these 14 qualities into our life on a more conscious level, and can begin to systematically practice and perfect ourselves in these qualities, which abilities which help us to develop metta, which the Buddha says is enormously important for the completion of a human being. Human being would never be completed, no matter how much knowledge he would have or she would have, if the heart is not widened, if metta is not penetrated throughout his or her entire being. In the enlightened human being, of whom we said that he knows totally his own real self or real nature, it is said that all what he does when he is responding to the word is the expression, the manifestation of metta, of loving kindness. When all hate, when all unwholesome qualities are overcome and the mind is clarified and purified, then there is only metta left. Then there is only the response from the heart and clear mind to the word. But until then, we have to do quite a lot of work with ourselves to come to this state of being, to this completion of ourselves. So, and here gives us the Buddha 14 exact guidelines or qualities which we should develop. So let me go through them. I always have to look at it because I don't know the the sequence of it. I already said that we all have these qualities. But in all of us, they are developed in or underdeveloped in different degrees, and we have not cultivated yet that mind which can pay attention to that and can also recognize the necessity and importance of developing and culturing these qualities much more wider and deeper, because we really don't recognize and understand on this level of our development deeply enough that to the to the completion of a human being, or that the perfect being is the perfect openness of love, of appreciation, of acceptance, of not pushing away the world. But is that quality actually which is able to stand and to see and to observe in an open way without reaction? And that is a quality which does not hurt, which doesn't insult, which doesn't talk lies or makes anything insulting or hurting. And that you can call loving kindness or love, universal love. So we are talking tonight about these 14 qualities which are helping us to perfect ourselves in the openness of heart, in the widening of heart, and so that we can recognize better these qualities within ourselves and can see what type or what kind come to earth qualities. They don't sound mystical. They don't sound supernatural. They don't sound superhuman. They are very natural qualities. And there is the first quality is a human being should be able. What does that mean? Very, very, very worldly aspect, actually, not the spiritual one, really, yet. That is that quality which allows me to develop an ability. You see, if we never do any effort to develop good abilities, maybe for a craft, or for some work, we are just having no discipline. We have no direction. We don't know what to do with our time. We do this and that and that and that. But to be able for one thing, or maybe for another, but if you learn a good ability for one field, you very likely have also some abilities in other fields. You see, why it is stressed that we should feel able or should develop ability is because it gives us self-confidence. When I know I know my field well, I have practiced in it, and I have learned the craft, I am able in it, that makes you feel good. It gives you self-confidence. But if I am not able in anything, I feel very insecure. I just don't have anything to show. I have no field in which I can practice my urge to do things. It is very natural, this urge to do. Our energies constantly push in us to do things. And if we don't develop ability, then we get pushed in many directions according to our desires. And when we are in that way, we also very likely are getting very tired because we really have no ability, and then we are leaving many, many things constantly unfinished. And that makes not very self-confident. So it gives, and in turn, self-confidence gives us a good feeling of restfulness in a way. It helps to reduce our restlessness we so very much have. So it is just a very good thing to develop ability. That is number one. And how this has anything to do, or how this contributes for the widening of your heart, you figure that out. And see how much ability you have, how much you need to complete yourself in it, or to practice in it. You see, that is also that quality which makes us start a thing. It is good, the quality of will in a way, but together with effort and together accomplishing something, together with learning something, putting your energies into one field. It's a very important quality. And then the next one is said, I have it in German, it says, gerade soll man sein. Now gerade, would that be straight, Sugata? Is it equivalent? Gerade sein? I would think so. Yeah. This means to be straight. Now we have, especially we hippies and we meditators, we have a kind of feeling about this word straight. We think the others are straight. And meaning that they are very attending to their job and they are making money and they have no other interest for meditating. So we think they are straight. In a way it is true, but they are out of balance. They're too straight. Just too much directed, too much concentrated in one direction. Not paid attention to the development of the mind and the widening of the heart. So, straight shall be the human being. That means he shall be very correct in his attitude, and not beating around the bush, so to speak. He shall be trustworthy, that would be straight. And also trusting would be also right. He should not hide things and be conniving, but should be, it's an openness of mind. It is a sensitivity in your heart where you don't fear and don't create any imaginary fear, where you can see yourself as a human being growing up, understanding a little, and having a good will. You understand what that could mean? Eric?
I think so.
Yeah, it is also that attitude where you are when you hear criticizing, critic or judging, you think it is a wrong judging, that you're not just reacting so fast, that you kind of, in a very quiet, upright attitude, listen and accept that first, and so that you have quiet and a real straight, trustworthy attitude where you can say then something. The next, the third quality which we should develop is similar to this one. It is also called being upright, being straight, not hiding actually is this moment. And maybe it is more referring to that quality which we call pride. It should be reduced. We should become aware of our pride, of our false pride, of being very proud, and expecting a lot of praise and being proud. Do you understand what proud is? Pride? Yeah. So that is meant by this quality, Gerardesein, reducing that, becoming aware of your hidden pride and becoming more modest in it. Because pride is a very a very negative quality, for it says, I am better than you, and I am much more worth than you are. So to become aware of this means, and to reduce that, and to become more natural in that, that means is meant the third one. And in that attitude, you also will recognize in a more open way that there is so much unwholesomeness in the world, so much bad things, and that in the next minute you can observe so many good things, and that they always are together. There is good and bad. And in this grade, in this straight attitude, is meant that you see both. You don't. You see the negative, and you watch it, but you don't forget that there is also a lot of positive. And when you see the positive, you just don't get caught up in the positive. You also know that there is a lot of negative. That keeps you balanced. So to recognize this existence with both, where both is existing, and you must see for yourself how you react to these things, what you have to bring into balance, whether you are always gloomy and always very negative and get caught in it, and that you cannot see anything good. Then you have to wake up and have to begin to also start looking and recognizing there's a lot of good too. That brings you into balance. You see, and that is a way contributing to widening your heart. That is not closing your heart. And that is not just selfish and egotistic. It's open, you see more. Your heart is for both. And you don't get caught in either. Good and bad exists in life next to each other. Don't forget that and practice reminding yourself on it. And when you really consciously make effort to see also the good, if you have the tendency only to see the bad. The number four quality is easy to speak, or easy to allow to be spoken to. That's difficult to allow to yourself, allow yourself to that people can speak to you easily. Don't make difficulties. Don't resist. Don't close your heart. Don't be suspicious or obstinate. It is the quality we are practicing so much, especially in our movement or expression exercise. I don't want to say, in our movement and expression as an aid for our practice. Of attention. As a quality of when I speak constantly of it. Please allow, I say. Permit. Let it flow in you. Let it be by itself. That means easy to speak to you. You permit that one can approach you easily. You're not like somebody who has many arms around you and make difficulties. Now you, for yourself, find out and sense in yourself how much you have to open up your heart and to let life come to you when it approaches. Kerstin, understand what is meant by it? Have you think you have a lot of things to do in this? Yes. It's wonderful, you see. It's a wonderful road given to us here for the widening of our heart, for completing ourselves in the great divine quality or mental atmosphere called metta or loving kindness. And it all is necessary because there is no completion of a human being if we don't develop our heart. Now the number five is speak softly. It is very close connected to the number four one. But you can see now for yourself where you have to practice a little bit more, whether you tend to charge and to be short-circuited and defensive. You must see what you have to develop here and have to remind yourself and become conscious of this quality in you. How much we need practice here. You see, we have this. We all can speak lovingly, and we all can be very tender and relate to our friend. But not all the time. It flips away this quality, like the attention from the breath. I don't know, friends, for one strange reason, the good qualities don't stay too long with us. They need to be developed and trained. The others, we don't need to do anything. They are very powerful and plentiful in us. Now, that is the way it is. So now the number six quality, we also know and are experiencing it here and then. But actually, at the present time, this quality becomes very rare. Even in here, I have experienced with you that it is a very rare quality, and that is called contentment. Satisfying quality, being content, being satisfied, not in a complacent, lazy way, but in a very light way, being content with what the day is bringing to me, with what this hour is unfolding for me. It is very difficult nowadays to be content, for one reason, because modern time has so many temptations built up for us. Wherever we go and look, there are always things and things to do and temptations for things to experience or some places to go, and some more things to see. And constantly this is approaching us, these temptations calling us. So, and our desires are following it. But we forget the desire has, the nature of the desire is we cannot satisfy it, it's unsatisfiable. So when we follow these calls and temptations around us, we get discontent very natural. We have no understanding anymore of a content heart, that it can be content this moment, just for the very purpose of having a nice weather, or having not a nice weather, rain weather, but we know it is good for plants. Being content that there is a sky above us and a ground below us. Being content that you are a human being. I mean, we have reasons to be content. On an existent level, many reasons, beautiful reasons. I am a human being. I have all qualities to awake to the greater enlightened mind, or to the sane mind, let's be modest. I can pick berries in the forest, and I have a tongue which can taste it. And I have eyes which can see the beauty of the nature. There's so many ways to be content. We have in this modern time now developed a continuous discontent. Because the moment we have something reached, we want it, and we have projected, now I will be happy or will be content, I already reach out for the next. So this is a very important quality of the heart to become aware of. And above all, to practice it. When you see discontent, awake. I want to be content, just with my being as it is. I am transporting wood now. I am pulling weed now. With that, I want to be content. If I really look at it, the whole universe is before me. You can think a little bit around, in connection, or around the things, or about the things you are in contact with, which could help you to become content. pulling the weeds. Beautiful for the carrots. They can grow. The carrots are a very important factor for my nourishment. Very important thing for my nourishment. It's wonderful. And whilst I do that, I hear birds singing, or a child crying, or I see a cat running by. Have all these abilities to experience right when I pull weed. See so many colors, so many forms. Experience so many smells. Do you ever think in these terms? When you feel discontent and unhappy? I would call this quality actually modest, being a little modest. And that is actually expressed in the second, in the seventh quality of the heart. It's called to be satisfied, to be satisfied. I think it is that what I just spoke about, being modest and being content with the things which are around me. And if they aren't always good, remember the good is next to the bad. And then still you can have a content heart. It takes us out of the restlessness. To be content with the food on my plate. To be content with the climate which is around me. You see, in order to come to this, for monks and for nuns, when they are entering a training for self-knowledge, or for they enter training sometimes for the whole lifetime, they take up this training. It takes long time, several lifetimes, to become a perfect, complete being. In order to make it easier and to train these two qualities, being content and to be easily to be contented, to be satisfied, there are many rules given to monks and to nuns. 311 rules for nuns and 227 rules for monks. I don't know why we have more. Must have a reason, ladies. I don't know. But these are helping us to develop this quality, to be content and to easily be satisfied or be contented. So, that in turn helps opening and widening the atmosphere, the mental atmosphere of loving kindness or of my heart. Number 8 is not to be too busy, not being a busy bee all the time, grasping constantly to do things, never allowing yourself a little rest and a deep breath and a little interval. In other words, even if you feel you need all that, we need all that busyness to keep us supplied with things, or need to have one or two or three different jobs. No, to give us also time for contemplation, to give us space just to stand and to look into the sky, to develop consciously the quality of balance, of being contemplative, not to be too busy, not having that compulsion all the time. That means also actually to become aware how I organize myself. Some people always are busy and actually never do anything, really. It's just busyness, busy, being busy. This is also a quality which calls for organizing your time, and so that you have time for being busy and time for just being quiet and enjoying non-action. It is a quality which can which is to develop, also to help us to overcome restlessness or unrest, because often when we are grasping for too much things to do, we are exciting ourselves and developing restlessness. Now the next one is a very interesting one, and we would never think that this is a quality which helps me widening my heart or developing loving kindness, or which is necessary for coming to know myself or completion of myself. That is the quality of the mind which we may call being economic or thrifty, not being verschwenderisch, not being, what is the opposite? Wasting and being careless, throwing things away. But it also is referring to this feeling of appreciating, that we not careless take something and throw it away, even if you don't need it or use it. But maybe an old chair, and you see a carving there, or you just know it's an old chair, you just a little bit needs to be repaired, instead of going and buying a new one, taking that chair with appreciation. Knowing appreciation means you remember, yes, a human being, human energy has once carved on these feet, has maybe once used his human energy and love perhaps, or caring, to create and create this what we call chair. And there was a relationship, a human relationship to that. And a mind was working there. And here I come and say, what, that old chair? Well, off. You see, no caring. Or a piece of rug. Or an old picture. Or an old dress, for that reason. We have in this society a tremendous desire to throw things away and to get new. Don't you? Is it in Sweden also? Very common? It's terrible in America. But my heart was feeling very good when I saw it in Germany, actually magnified even more so. And in France I saw it too. So it's throwing things away. That refers to being economic, not because of the only the saving the money in that aspect, but it is also that aspect of appreciating in here, of having your heart in it, and knowing about all things actually. This cane, this watch, all these things, this candle, this pot, are actually the expression of what? Of the human mind. It couldn't come about. It needed a silversmith to do this nice curving here and to melt it down and to make it just to that form. He couldn't do it in hate. He couldn't do it in anger. It wouldn't form, or in restlessness. He really attended. And at that moment, the mind was quiet and was connected to what he was doing. And this is a piece of bamboo. Someone had to cut the bamboo and find that straight piece. Not sure whether it is bamboo, but something very straight. No, I don't think it is. No, it would have these interruptions. No, it isn't. So, but anyway, it had to be found that straight. And maybe it wasn't. It had to be bent a little, you see. And to make just that fitting into this, lots of care was necessary, and mind attention. And so if we see a thing like that, and we just don't have any connection to it, we are very unappreciative of life. To all things, you should actually approach yourself in a more a full way. You go to a piano, old one or new one, and you sit down and you start to play, or even if you don't play, you just look at that, all these many keys, and you press one key and there is a miracle. It comes, a sound comes. It needed mind and heart and dedication and skill, ability to do that, you see. And so this is the quality we should develop, appreciation, together with, when you have appreciation, then thriftiness comes in too. You are not wasteful. You are very likely to be very careful with things. Yeah? Richard?
Also here in Sweden there are lots of people who throw away almost new things.
Oh yeah,
in containers and so on.
Yeah.
But when you see all these things, it is not meant here that you should take care of all the things that you see.
No.
Just not throw away your own things.
It is more meant your mental attitude toward this. And also toward your immediate environment. You see, and that when you have things, you just don't do the same. Because you throw things away and you have to go out and do some effort and work and earn money to get it again. Just because you didn't like this or didn't like that. No, it is more meant, you are careful with things. You're not wasting. And you can't care about everybody. And if you see that, and you happen to need something, well then you will be very appreciative. What they throw away, that is another way. You take it. You see, you can't, don't, if you have pride and you don't, because somebody else threw it away, then you're not appreciative, you see. Then you have wrong attitude. I sometimes just pick up because even if I don't need it, I know someone else needs, just out of, it is too good to throw away. Just I can't, it's too good or is too much waste involved. And some things, you know, if you don't need it, you have a place for it, someone else will come along and use it and need it. And it is a saving of energy too, you see.
That was what I meant.
Pardon?
You know, that
pardon?
Was what I meant, if that was how you should also do.
Yeah.
Because I know absolutely.
You see, it can go to finer things. It can go to very, very fine things in your daily life. with regard to your own possessions, even if you have a few, there we can still do a great deal of practice, being more appreciative. A certain order belongs to appreciation. How I place my shoes outside the room, whether I throw them and let one land in this corner and the other one in the other corner, it belongs to that, because then you don't show your appreciation of these shoes which really serve you for protecting your feet from the floor and wet and cold and so on. Another being has made them. There is very much involved. One just cannot express these qualities in one word. We could talk probably when I would ask you to give me examples and to think, and you could tell me how much you need to develop this or that quality. We could talk till tomorrow morning about it. It's such a vast field. You see, this number nine quality, to be economic, to be saving, to be careful with things we use, not to be wasteful, is also meant to be understood as the expression of not being thoughtful. My example with the shoes would be that, you see, not being thoughtful how I place the shoes. Not being thoughtful when I leave my seat and I let the blanket just fall into itself to a hip, or like to something very untidy. So being thoughtful would mean I pick it up and I make a very nice folding thing out of it, which is pleasing for the next one to look at, because it expresses order. But to me it expresses even more. It expresses that a mind was very careful and appreciating that blanket and giving it that order. And that you can do in your room with every little thing in your room. How you place the vase and the flower, where you put your socks, how you fold your shirt, and so on. It's a very vast field in which we all can practice quite a lot, endlessly, actually. Number 10. And that is that atmosphere we could call to walk with quiet senses. To move yourself through life with the senses in peace. The sense of seeing, the sense of hearing, the sense of tasting, of smelling, and of the sense which thinks. It is that atmosphere where you begin to understand your senses as the door for your experience. You experience the world through your senses, and that you are watching and guarding, and that they are experiencing in a quiet way. And that you begin to know of it when they are not in a quiet way experiencing. And that you pay attention to that and practice quiet way experiencing seeing in a harmonious way, experiencing, allowing the sense organs to experience. Mit beruhigtem Sinn. And that is with a quieting feeling, to let the senses experience. And also it is when we are learning in developing this quality, it is also the understanding that it is necessary to practice that, because the senses, when they are not experiencing in quiet or in harmony, they can upset ourselves a great deal. They bring chaos into our life. They are following the motive or are motivated then by greed or hate. So that is very important to understand this atmosphere in ourselves, atmosphere of the experiences through our senses. And the number 11 is where we begin to awake and to guard a little, not to be influenced too easily by other people, or in such a way that if you see some excitedness over there, some tremendous unrest, that you are getting into it and you let yourself be influenced by it. Somebody very angry and hateful, you guard that in you, that you are not wiped away with it, that you are influenced by that atmosphere, by these angry energies. And it's the same with number 12 near, is that you guard and become aware of that atmosphere in us which likes to be dependent all the time. We rely on everything and reach out get very easily into dependency. And somebody has an opinion, another opinion, and you rely on these opinions other people have. You take it as your own, very unreliable, making you very very dependent. It does not allow in you to grow the quality of thinking also for yourself. That doesn't now mean you are obstinate and insisting. It's a balance between the two. In the beginning we said being easily talked to, not being obstinate. Now we say in number 12, not to listen or be in depending on other people's ideas and feelings. You see that there is
Band 5, 1981, Vipassana, kvällsföredrag med Ruth Dennison på Ljusbacken.
Did you enjoy your birthday cake? You still enjoy it? It's gone. How old do you become today?
26.
A good time, a good age to start very seriously on the way of the Dharma. I think that we have now, on the evening of the fifth day, somehow a little idea or a good little answer to the great question, why am I here? Why do I meditate? Why do I go through so much effort and pain and well, effort is good, and so much pain. Why do I have to do all this? I think that we now perhaps realize that it is for our knowing ourselves a little more, for understanding this living process which I am, and to which we have referred last night quite deeply. I think you remember that we have recognized and see that there is not really the full truth when I say I sit here, I eat my dinner, I go in holidays. For this I we have seen is actually just like in a collective name for parts, remember? For parts, for many parts, like the name car is the collective term for many parts, which when they are put together in the right order, there is a mechanism which transports us and runs, and we call it car. In this same way, we have somehow tried to understand it is with us, that we are comprised as a living process of many parts. We were mentioning five parts. There are many more under divisions, naturally, otherwise we the five parts, we said, is me, And if that would be all, we would know ourselves already. But each part, the part of the body, the part of feeling, the part of perception, the part of consciousness, and the part of mental formation, have many, many sub-parts. It is endless. We can talk to the end of our life about it, and we can also be engaged in this process in which we are engaged to find out about these parts, about these little these little parts working together in constant interaction and comprising this process I call myself. And that is why it is so difficult to really know it in a short time. We have to work very slowly and very long and very precise in a way till we begin to recognize these little parts and how they interact and how they relate to each other. And the greatest difficulty is that it is not somewhere here next to us where we can observe that. No, it is right here what I observe. That process is myself. So it is also, it's an observing of myself. It is a becoming acquainted with itself, the process, actually, since this I is also not so real. You see, it is a mental quality, we said, a mental capacity called concentration and attention, which is beginning to get open and to begin to look or to observe all the other little parts, all the other mental factors or mental abilities, and the physical too. And it is very evasive and very elusive because it is not a solid thing we have here and say, now attention, now concentration, please come and stay with me and observe the whole living process and tell me. You see, it is not so. This me is not really in there. It's not necessary for observing and for watching or for looking. What else did we say? For attending, for being a witness. Not. It is the attention which does it, and the concentration which helps the attention to stay there. So, and that is some mental vibration, which is very liquid and very movable. It arises, and it also goes away, like all the other qualities or abilities, like. Diligency or effort or let me say elasticity we mentioned, all these are also mental abilities. And just like attention, it arises and goes away. And that's why it is so difficult to come to understand how it works in here. But the Buddha gave us quite an exact way and gave us a very good direction. That is so wonderful about the teaching of the Dharma, that it is just a way to follow. We have direction, and I try all day long to share these directions with you, to invite you to follow them, and to manifest them, the doing of the direction. So this whole process of coming to understand itself is based on two planes, or two, what should I say? It's based on a foundation, let me say. Is based on a behavior which we may call morality, or in the Pali text it's sila. So that is to say, in order to practice this doing of looking into this living process, in order to develop this awareness and this understanding, we have to conduct ourselves in a very special way. That is meant, it is based on sila or on moral conduct. The very special way is that we are following some rules for our behavior which keep us away from a very gross and impulsive behavior or doings, which don't disturb, which usually, if we would do, disturb ourselves. And so there are some special rules given which protect us from this gross, impulsive behavior. And I think you remember in the beginning we spoke and committed ourselves to five basic rules. And that is called the foundation of sila. If you can keep to these basic rules, you abstain from speaking the untruth and of harsh words and of angry words, of insulting words, of speaking in such a way where you are putting people against each other, or speaking very bad about people, or insulting. And there is the rule of not committing violent actions or taking life. Then there is the rule of abstaining or keeping away from not stealing, or in a positive way we can say respecting other people's property. And there is that important rule of abstaining or staying away from any sort of intoxicants or drugs. And then there is that rule of being a very accurate and very straight in your intimate relationships. I have repeated that tonight for one reason, because it is not easy for a normal person to really keep always to these rules and to be perfect in sila, to be really accomplished in that sort of in that way of life. It takes long time. We have to practice and to remind ourselves and to promise again and again these rules to obey. Not so much as a law, you should do it, but rather more as an understanding that if I don't keep to such a moral life, I am not able really to dedicate efforts and time for the exploring and of myself, of coming to self-knowledge. That is a very basic thing to accomplish. Our practice must rest on sila. Very important. Because it protects us. It is like a wall around us from the cruelties and bad things in life. Which are in everybody. So it protects us not so much from the others, cruel others, immoral life and living, but it protects us from ourselves when we begin to understand that sila is the basis for the practice of coming to understand myself. And then this practice rests upon another great foundation, and that would be the development of what the Buddha calls metta. That is, he also calls it, when you read the scriptures, divine abode, or the divine dwelling. Now, abode and dwelling is like a physical place, we would think, but that's not what is meant. It is more to be understood as a mental state, as a type of consciousness. But actually it is to be understood even more than that. To dwell in metta means actually to have a very wide open heart and an open mind. You see, we usually live in a very constricted way, very narrow, very concerned with ourselves and with our worries and anxieties, with our hopes and with our expectation, and also with our demands and our rejection. That is always referred to what I feel here. But that is not but the space and the state of metta is something is which wants to get us out of that, which invites us to widen our heart and to widen our mind. In other words, to cut loose from these very personal concerns all the time, and stay there a little bit more fearless and open with our heart in an embracing way, in a more couraged way. Yeah, I would say in a more, well, aware way is true, but in a grateful way too. You, for what you have and what you are a human being. And you have the capacity to find out about your real true nature. And that is a very beautiful thing, that we have this. Many people don't even know of that and never come to know, and go out of this life in a very restricted, narrow, painful way. Now, metta shall help us to overcome this egocentricity, this selfishness of ourselves. And it is always addressing and concerning our heart. You see, we all know what the heart means. It isn't just that which beats here. But it is actually something, or when you speak about somebody and say, you want to describe his very nice quality, you probably have said often or heard others saying, he has a good heart. You have not seen his heart. You don't mean because it has a better red color, or it is beating faster or more rhythmically. You don't mean that he has a good heart. You mean something on the mental level, but not alone on the mental level. It is something which is connected, which is also mental, but it is connected to a quality of the mind which is actually love, and which is so very contrary to that usual behavior of ourselves, where we close up and retreat and are fearful and suspicious and so very much only concerned about ourselves. Now, metta is that state of mind which goes over these limits, which reaches out to the other you in helping, wanting to help, maybe in listening, in understanding more. And it's not just doing it because of your personal liking it. It is just recognizing actually that actually all beings, all human life, and also all non-human life is in a natural way striving toward feeling good, toward happiness, toward getting away from suffering. And so this state, which we call widening your heart, means you kind of understand that, and you are therefore making yourself available for all life around you, or at least you try and think of it in these terms. You acknowledge other life, and you open up and overcome your retreating and your fears and your suspicion. And that is called metta. It is this quality in us which is tender and caring and really opening up, loving in a way, but not only loving because you get something for this in return. No, this is a quality of the heart which does not ask for that. It doesn't want anything for the self, because it somehow begins to understand that what we said before, that self is actually only a name for all the parts I am, for that entire process. So how can the self expect something? It is really not there, it's just that name for that process. And that entire process is so vast and so vast, and yet so without substance. It's just energy constantly in motion. It doesn't have the quality of wanting something in return. It doesn't have that striving and needing and clinging. It doesn't. It is flowing, and it is changing all the time. It is has even no solid substance. So it is all what is there. It can look at it and can meet it. There is no boundary, no fence around it, and makes a limit here between me and you. My process is flowing and changing and living in constant interaction as energy, and yours too. So there, how can I expect anything, you see? When I love, I can love here and can be open without wanting anything for me. If something comes, it's fine. But it isn't that demand for that there. That is a very special quality of love, therefore. That's why it's called metta, because when you translate metta, it is actually more called all-embracing love. Kindliness it is. In German we have a very nice word for that. It's called Güte. But in English I really don't find a better one. It is loving kindness, perhaps. Loving kindness. It is not to mix up, and it isn't really that what we usually understand on the love. We think of two people, they love each other, and they're very passionate with each other, and very